Hi, it's Monday 9th of March. I'm Gary Bauman from Check-In Asia.
And I'm Hannah Pearson from Pay Anderson.
On today's show, we'll be updating the latest coronavirus-related travel developments, and we'll be taking a leap into the future with our wish list of hopes and expectations for the tourism rebound when it may happen.
If it happens. So let's get started. This is the Southeast Asia Travel Show.
Hello, wherever in the world you are, and thanks for listening in. Well, unfortunately, it remains a very gloomy time for travel and tourism here in Asia and around the world. It's 2 weeks since our last pod, Hannah. We took a break last week because we were both so busy. Yeah. So what have you been up to in the last 14 days?
Well, I've spent the last couple of weeks really following the updates that are happening about the impact of coronavirus on tourism within Southeast Asia. So looking at each and every country, seeing what government stimuluses are being put out, reactions with outbound tourism, with inbound tourism, what initiatives governments are proposing to counter the effects. And really, it's been pretty gloomy.
Yeah, you've been updating that pretty regularly on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
So if listeners aren't on your LinkedIn feed, we'll put that on our social media so they can follow that.
Yeah. And how about you, Gary? So you've actually been traveling.
I went down to Singapore. Mm. Yeah, I hosted an event, co-hosted an event down there for the American Club in Singapore with Dr. Piotr Chlepitsky. Mm-hmm. He's an infectious diseases expert.
Oh.
He worked at the Singapore General Hospital during the SARS crisis. Mm-hmm. So he has a very, very good take on how this is actually very different to SARS, but also the context and how, you know, how difficult that time was in Singapore.
Mm.
So he gave a really good medical overview of how the coronavirus is spreading, its origins, and the type of virus that it actually is. He looked at some of the data, particularly from China, about the people that it's affected and those that have actually died from it.
Yeah.
That was very good. And then I did more of an economic overview about how this is affecting the travel and tourism sector, but also everything from airlines to oil to cargo, you know, everything around the world.
Everything.
So that was pretty interesting. We had a very good Q&A, probably about 30-minute Q&A.
Nice.
There were a lot of questions about, there was a lot of fears, obviously, about what's actually happening now.
Yeah.
But there were people looking ahead. They might have booked tickets to go to the Japan Olympics.
Mm.
There were some American visitors who were going home to travel with their families in the US or in the Caribbean. So they were a bit concerned about, you know, by the summertime, will this still affect them? So we had a good discussion.
Good. And you've also been traveling domestically as well.
Well, I went up to Langkawi for a couple of days. I took advantage of some of the cheap deals that are going around at the moment. And it was quite interesting up in Langkawi. I'd say it was generally quieter than it normally would be at this time of the year. But because the hotels have reduced their rates quite significantly, and so have the airlines, there were quite a lot of weekenders up there. So, they've rescued their tourism sector, but it certainly wasn't as gloomy as I was expecting it to be.
That's good.
Yeah. Some of the bars and restaurants were relatively full.
Hmm. Oh, maybe this push for domestic tourism is working.
Yeah, maybe there is. Let's hope so.
Exactly. So I guess we should have a look at what's happened in the past couple of weeks then.
We looked back, didn't we? Our last podcast was on the 25th of February, and we updated the figures at that time. So that's just under 2 weeks ago. And globally, there were 79,336 cases at that time. Fast forward to the 7th of March, which is a couple of days ago, and the global figure passed 100,000.
Yeah.
And it also, there were confirmed cases in 100 countries.
Yeah.
I think it's 101 now.
Exactly. Total numbers, we were just looking earlier, and it was 110,092 cases. And if we're looking around Southeast Asia, I mean, these numbers are starting to shoot up. I would say not quite as rapidly as we are seeing in Europe.
Yep.
You know, it's really ballooned, isn't it, in places like France and Italy.
Yep.
But Singapore, still the most, 150. Malaysia, 99. Thailand, 50. Vietnam, 30. Philippines, 10. Indonesia, 6. So they finally got their first cases.
Yep.
And Cambodia, 2. It still means 3 countries in Southeast Asia have not had any confirmed cases, so Myanmar, Laos, and Brunei, if that's a little ray of sunshine, I suppose.
And one of the interesting things that we found is we looked at the cases, which globally is 110,092, but of those cases, 62,302 have actually recovered.
Yes.
So there is some positive light there.
Exactly,
But we also looked at the new countries. There were 8 new countries, according to the WHO, that recorded cases on the 7th. So these are the latest figures that were issued last night.
Yeah.
And those countries were Bulgaria, Faroe Islands, Malta, Moldova, those are in Europe, Costa Rica in Central America, French Guiana in South America, Martinique in the Caribbean, and the Maldives in South Asia. Now, when you look at that list, there are some big holiday destinations there. Yeah, there's Maldives, of course, Costa Rica, Malta, Martinique.
Yeah, I mean, and so these are all, again, going to be countries that are going to be really hit. I mean, you know, and they're also very reliant on tourism. You think somewhere like Maldives, that's one of its main drivers, I think, for their, their GDP.
And as we're going to be looking at some of the hoped-for issues of the, the rebound, we have to be realistic that there are 100 countries in the world now have confirmed cases. Yes. Some of these have a lot of confirmed cases. Exactly. It's only going to continue. So when this rebound happens and people are feeling travel ready to travel again, where are they going to go?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. You know, I imagine places like China, South Korea, Japan are not going to be on the to-travel list.
Nor Italy.
Italy.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, and we've seen other big events being cancelled the past couple of weeks. Of course, ITB Berlin. That was the big one, you know, the biggest event in our industry, really, happening once a year.
Cancelled right at the last minute, too.
Yep. So whether that was handled in the right way or not is kind of up for debate.
Yeah, you know? It's a difficult one. That is a tricky one because it is the biggest show of the year. It's the biggest event. It brings everybody from around the world.
Yeah.
But it is quite interesting. They'd already cancelled ITB China. They'd already cancelled ITB India in advance. But ITB Berlin itself, it's the showpiece.
Yeah.
It's a showpiece event, and it got cancelled right at the last time when a lot of people had already travelled to the event.
Yeah, I mean, which almost kind of negates cancelling it, because if you're worried about all these people coming into Berlin, actually those people have many of them still travel to Berlin. I saw lots of posts about everyone trying to meet up with everybody else in a much more informal way.
Let's hope they rescued something out of that week. But we've seen some other events have also been postponed in the industry. The PATA annual summit, I think, has been cancelled or postponed. The Mekong Tourism Forum, that's been pushed back from April to August. That's being hosted in Bagan in Myanmar. So we're really seeing that all these major events, which really oil the cogs of the industry, are just being shut down.
Exactly. I mean, and the other big news that came out last week was another forecast from IATA that airlines are going to take $113 billion USD hit. And their previous forecast, that was about a month ago, and I think we were discussing it then, was just $29
billion.
Yeah, so 29 to 113.
Yeah, I mean, $113 billion for global airlines, that's their worst case scenario. Yeah. I think they said it could be somewhere between about, I think it's 63 and 113, but I mean,
you know, the way this is going.
Yeah, let's not be too picky about that. That's a huge, huge figure.
Yeah. I mean, and some other headline figures that are coming out from ASEAN, so places like Cambodia, inbound tourists declined by 52%.
Yeah, compared to to the same period last year.
Exactly. The Tourism Authority of Thailand have downgraded their forecast for number of foreign tourists to Thailand to 33.8, so that's 6 million less than they started the year thinking.
Yeah, and Vietnam has said that during January and February, it says that the figures actually rose slightly compared to last year.
Yes, did increase.
But it is the lowest increase rate for 4 years.
Yes.
And has been growing quite quickly in the last
year. Exactly, so 4.8% was quite a low increase for them.
So it's gloomy news. Mm. It's gloomy news worldwide. Can we look ahead to a rebound?
Yes.
Is there going to be a recovery? So that brings us to the main thrust of this week's show. We've put together a top 8 wish list for the post-COVID-19 travel recovery.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we really were thinking, is this downturn really going to give us the chance to radically rethink travel and tourism?
Yeah.
So let's get started then.
We pulled our ideas. We put together a wish list of things we would like to see happen in travel and tourism. Yeah, as you said, it gives us a pause to rethink some of the things that have been done badly. There wasn't a great deal of pre-planning for this virus, even though there were warnings that something like an outbreak like this could happen.
Yeah.
So how does the tourism industry reconfigure itself? How does it not just pull back from the brink, but how does it plan ahead for the years to come?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So number one,
I think, should be no tourism at any price. And this ties very nicely back to Gary's, it was in our 20 for the 2020s, and his wish for not having all of these meaningless visit country, you know, visit Malaysia 2020, visit Thailand 2021, you know, all of these campaigns that governments kind of come up with a random number that they've kind of pulled out thin air.
One thing that the coronavirus has really highlighted is just how important tourism is for economies now.
Yes.
Much more than it was even 5-10 years ago, particularly in Asia, but also around the world.
Yes.
The clampdown of Chinese outbound tourism has hit pretty much every tourism economy hard around the world. But we're also seeing that in Southeast Asia, not people aren't really traveling between countries anymore.
Yeah.
Certainly long-haul travel has fallen off a cliff.
Yes.
Cruise travel at the moment is in terrible trouble. The airlines are really cutting their capacities
mm-hmm.
within our region, but also longer haul as well.
Yeah.
So the whole infrastructure is closing down a little bit. So we have to rethink how we market tourism in the future, because as you say, we've had this tourism at any price mentality, which has fueled like these words like over-tourism.
Yeah.
But it's also fueled heavy discounting because there's so much capacity, there's so much airline seats, there are so many hotel rooms to sell.
Yeah.
And it's also fueled this idea that countries can, or governments particularly, can launch these annual campaigns, which distort the market a little bit.
Yes.
They require tourism providers to spend money on advertising and campaigning that they wouldn't normally do as part of this national campaign to hit a certain figure.
Yep.
And that's what we're looking at. We're looking at volume tourism with that.
Yes.
And that's not really the way ahead, I don't think.
No.
Although having said that, we're going to be pulling back from such huge losses that all figures are going to matter, aren't they? I mean, we have to be realistic about that. We're going to be really focusing on percentage growth figures over the next 2 years because they've dropped so much.
Exactly. I mean, and I think sustainability also plays a little role here, and it would be nice for tourism companies to take this opportunity and say, okay, right, well, how can we make our destinations more sustainable? How can we encourage tourism to visit in a sustainable way? You know, if you're looking at places like Komodo Islands in Indonesia, where they're even thinking about maybe they were going to close it, and then decided no, that they weren't.
Yeah.
You know, now is the time when they don't have so many tourists to have a really good think about what kind of strategy they want to pursue in the future.
Yeah, yeah. But as we said, it is so integrated into the economy, particularly in some of the emerging nations of our region, that you know they can want numbers back up pretty quickly.
Yes.
The other aspect to that is, as we said, a lot of airlines are cutting capacities, mostly for the next 2 months, usually up until about end of April, perhaps into May. But can they raise those back up quickly enough? Will they even want to? Will they be a little bit more cautious about doing that because they've been caught out so badly here?
Yeah.
I guess the other side is oil prices dropping quite significantly in the moment. The cost of buying fuel is not going to be quite so high. But even so, I think airlines going forward will be a little bit more cautious than they were coming into this crisis.
Definitely, I think so. So that brings us nicely to our second wish, which is really how can we avoid all of this mass discounting?
We're seeing already, so there is a huge degree of strategic discounting. Airlines and hotels have still got capacity to fill, and there's no doubt that one of the ways they're going to have to do that is to drop rates.
Yes.
We don't know how long that will last for, but I'm getting messages all the day on my phone and my email. I'm sure you are too, Hannah.
Yeah, I am.
I think in Indonesia, they offered up to 50% discount on flights to certain destinations.
Yeah, exactly. Funded by the government.
Funded by the government to try and generate some travel demand.
Yes.
I think in Bangkok, in Thailand, they did something similar. I think some of the airlines were required to drop their prices. Here in Malaysia, we've seen a lot of discounting.
Yes.
Some of the routes on the domestic, some of the prices on domestic routes are a lot cheaper than they were. I looked recently at some flights to Bali from KL, and the prices now, I mean, are probably about at least 50% cheaper than they would normally be.
Yeah. So it's how then do you go from having such low prices to bringing it back up to normal levels when the rebound is there?
Well, the problem, as we were just saying there, is that at the moment, a lot of people in our region aren't really ready to travel. They're not preparing to travel. So these discounts are chasing customers that may not be ready to buy.
Exactly.
But as that period drops and we move towards a recovery, will we have the sustained discounting when people actually want to start traveling again? Will that be the extra incentive? It's a very price-sensitive region.
Yes, it is. You know, and I think cheap airfares is probably what got the region so interconnected in the first place, right, and what kind of kicked off travel. So are we going to see that again? I mean, I hope that hotels and airlines won't do the constantly very, very cheap discounted mentality when the rebound does come. But have to see, won't we?
Yeah. Which brings us to number three. Now, this one was your choice, Hannah.
Mm.
You said that you hope that there's a greater recognition and appreciation that tourism employs 1 in 10 people worldwide. So a tenth of the global workforce is either indirectly or directly related to tourism. And that it is actually a more prestigious industry to be a part of than is sometimes recognised.
Yeah, I mean, I think nowadays, I mean, particularly in the West, but even I think still in Southeast Asia, tourism, the tourism industry in general, is not really seen as a very, I was going to say glamorous, but you've still got the travel aspect, so that is glamorous, but still not really a desirable sector to be in. I don't think you see many parents encouraging their children, you know, go into the travel industry. Sure. That's one for, you know, go be a doctor, go be a lawyer, don't go be a travel agent, for example. But, you know, inevitably now, like we keep saying, tourism has such a big role to play within the economies here. I think people are actually going to start realizing that and saying, oh, hey, you know, our industry is slowing down, the tourism industry is slowing down, these things are interlinked.
One of the things I saw during the time that I lived in China, the 6 years I lived there, was in 2004 when I first moved there, it was very similar. The service industry, and particularly the hotel industry, wasn't seen as really a career option. But as more international hotels were opening more hotels around the region, they were giving more training opportunities. And then you started to see a lot of young, bright, and very intelligent young hoteliers. You know, they had the money, so they were going to the Swiss institutes to learn international management of hotels. And then that actually opens up an international career, because once you're actually, you know, you move up the levels, you can travel around the world in the hotel industry.
That's true.
So I saw that happen quite a lot, and it would be great to see that happen here in Southeast Asia as well, more opportunities for training and development. Maybe this is one of the things the travel industry will have to learn.
Yes.
It probably will have to shed employees. I don't think there's going to be much doubt about that.
No.
But those that it keeps, you know, look at the opportunities for future growth.
Yeah, exactly. So now is the time to do training in-house whilst people are taking this kind of downtime, and, you know, really encourage them to go out and learn things instead of just sit fiddling on their phones and on Facebook whilst because they've got nothing to do.
The coronavirus aside, is a very fast-changing industry.
Yeah.
And there's a lot to learn. There's a lot of opportunities for growth and development.
Yeah. So our fourth wish then is that domestic tourism become a more popular choice, not just second best. And not just to first-tier cities, but to second-tier cities and third-tier cities.
Yeah, this is a recurring theme for us. We're both very, very, very pro-domestic tourism, because
Absolutely.
It does fall under the radar. I mean, a lot of the work that you do is outbound tourism.
Yes.
We also do a lot of inbound tourism work as well. But the domestic tourism sector, particularly in Southeast Asia, just goes under the radar, even though it is so important.
Yeah.
It gets a lot less media coverage.
Yes.
A lot of the airlines don't focus on it quite as much. I guess because it generates less revenue. But at the moment, as we're seeing, as people are more fearful to travel across borders, there is a much bigger focus on domestic travel. Yeah. We've seen that in pretty much all countries of the region.
Yeah.
And even the Philippine president said that he would encourage Filipinos to travel more within their region at this period to support their brethren around the country.
Exactly.
Who
he was going to go do a roadshow around the Philippines. Yeah. I don't know if he still is because of coronavirus.
Yeah,
I mean, you can see nearly every single country actually, when they're coming out with their kind of contingency plans for tourism, it's all focused on domestic tourism.
Yeah.
You know, Indonesia, Malaysia, Philippines, all of these, Thailand. Focus on domestic tourism, get everybody traveling there. And I guess, you know, they're spending money that's then going to go into locals' pockets as well, isn't it?
Here in Malaysia, they've even developed a specific domestic tourism travel show, which...
Yeah, it's coming beginning of May.
Beginning of May. That hasn't happened before.
No, exactly. So it's a good stimulus. And, you know, it's really the time now to not just look at the known tourism destinations, but go off the beaten track. And I think so many people, even in their own countries, don't know, you know, more unusual places to visit.
Sure. Yeah, the secondary and tertiary locations are going to get, I would suspect, support from the government to try and boost their not just their availability, but their promotional activities as well. Which brings us to number five on our list.
Yes.
So, we would hope that countries would take a more integrated approach to inbound, outbound, and domestic travel.
Yes.
And that's not just for leisure travel. That's for group, FIT, business tourism. You know, make this a whole three-way process. And this just isn't related to destination marketers or to governments. You know, the hotels, the airlines, they can really focus on this a little bit more. So they actually integrate their strategies across those three different
areas. I mean, and I think, obviously, one of the ways they can also look, particularly for the inbound, is at source markets.
Yeah.
Right? And I think it's become abundantly clear now that relying on just one source market like China or South Korea is very dangerous. You know, you need to diversify and attract lots of different source markets. And that probably means developing new tourism products within your country to attract that market as well.
Yeah.
But it's worth doing, isn't it?
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think the other thing about domestic tourism is there's a lot of data that doesn't get used. You know, a lot of people travel quite regularly, but it doesn't seem to be that data gets really, really used in how you sell inbound, particularly inbound, but also outbound travel as well.
Yeah,
there are a lot of patterns that probably could be utilized a lot more effectively.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, in speaking of data, I think it's number 6 on our wish list is looking for more innovative digital strategies to attract customers. I mean, I thought specifically to do with travel agents because I'm from a travel agency background, but it can be from anybody. It can be from a hotel chain who's been predominantly offline before. It can be from airlines. And there's so many travel companies out there who are still very much offline and still attracting customers in an offline way. And even those people who do want to travel right now probably don't want to be going into a travel agency to do it, right? They want to find other ways of doing it, whether that's over WhatsApp or a call or chatbot, as we were talking about earlier, right? 2020s, I think, the reference chatbots. But now is the time when we really see who is going to be innovative and who is going to grab a share of the market.
Well, when we did the event for the American Chamber of Commerce in Kuala Lumpur 2-3 weeks ago, one of the questions we got asked was by a young marketer saying that obviously demand for travel is down, there's a lot of cancellations, you know, all the requests they're getting are really at the moment are about refunds.
Yes.
And she asked us, how do we actually start planning ahead for marketing? When do we start? When do we stop?
Yeah.
And the interest, I mean, the argument as marketers is obviously, well, you never stop. You must be more creative and you must be prepared to make mistakes because not everything's going to work, but not everything works in during times when it's more positive.
Yeah.
And marketing is just generally going to be an up and down business, but you've got to find those plus points that you can really, really push for when people are ready to travel again. So creative marketing is going to be very, very important to dig ourselves out of this hole.
Yes. And linked to that really is, you know, product teams have got this downtime now to research and learn. So I think our wish for number 7 is that destination marketers will get more creative in anticipation of this rebound.
Yeah. And looking at the way that people are traveling and also how they've been affected for not traveling during this period. So we've been doing some work with a hotel chain in China.
Yeah.
And they've really done some research. It's quite interesting. They've been looking at how a lot of the social media content that's being posted over the last few weeks has been increasingly about how younger people in particular are wary, not just of not catching the coronavirus, but it's made them more health and wellness focused in general.
Yep.
So the whole well-being thing now, their nutrition, their fitness, you're doing yoga, you know, these kinds of things about the whole holistic program of your lifespan. And they're actually going to be looking into how they market in future. It's going to be about wellness and well-being because they really believe in the domestic travel market in China, that this will become a very, very big element of encouraging people to travel. So there's one niche there that might be interesting to look at elsewhere around the world.
Yeah, I think so. And our 8th wish is that lessons will be learned about how this COVID-19 period has really influenced consumer and travel behavior.
Yeah, I mean, that's a little bit leading on from what I just said there. Exactly. Is about, you know, what have been some of the factors? You know, a lot of people have had to stay home. They've been self-quarantined or their companies have said, you can't come into work, you've got to stay home. Yeah. In Singapore, that may be happening here in Malaysia, but they're working staggered hours. So some people in the same department aren't in the office at the same time.
Yeah.
So we're seeing changes in sort of that life-work balance.
Yeah.
How will that play out in future and how is that going to affect the travel and tourism sector? We've seen in China in particular this massive rise of gaming and live streaming because we haven't got much to do.
Yes.
It's also affected the way that home delivery services are actually, you know, a lot of people are actually having these home delivery services sent straight to their car. So they watch outside the window for the delivery driver to arrive. Then they open the boot of the car and it's delivered into, because they don't want any contact. So these sort of elements are developing. And also there was a report, I think also came from China, about how there's a lot more vicarious travel. People are traveling virtually during this period, you know, trying to cheer themselves up by doing a Google Map trip around the world or something like that, just to sort of keep in touch with travel, even though there's no real hope at the moment that they can go on holiday.
Yeah, I mean, and I think the reality is that something like COVID-19 is going to happen again.
Yeah. Oh, well, absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
You know, this, how interconnected the world is nowadays is going to happen again. It'll probably happen again sooner.
And rewind slightly, and with hindsight, it's so much easier to say that this one was going to happen at some point.
Yes.
So how much was pre-planned? How had we just overcapacitated the whole industry.
Mm.
So the contraction was just so much bigger than it possibly could have been. Yes. It's easy to say because everybody wants growth in travel. Mm-hmm. It's been such a dynamic industry through the 2010s pretty much, especially in Southeast Asia.
Yeah, I mean, it's really growing. But how can tourism boards plan for that better? How can hoteliers plan for that better? How can even... But yeah, how can airlines plan for this better? Yeah. How can travel agents plan for this better? How can tourism boards plan for this better?
And even just on the very basic level, I mean, we ourselves have changed a little bit our patterns. You know, we're washing our hands much, much more, using hand sanitizer much, much more. I was at the airport in Kuala Lumpur a week or so ago, and I noticed in Kuala Lumpur you have to put your index fingers onto the scanning.
Yes.
And people are actually wiping that with their elbow before they actually...
And then they're wiping it afterwards, really?
Which I thought was quite interesting.
That is interesting.
Yeah. So these patterns of behavior that we've got into, some of the language that we're using, and everybody's using these words, COVID-19, coronavirus, clusters, patient zero, contact tracing. We never used any of those before.
No. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? It's great. I think by the time this period is over, we will really see a difference in, you know, like you're saying, the way people behaving in their leisure life, whether they're gaming more, whether they want to spend more time with their family, because that's something that they've had to do with nurseries being closed or schools being closed. And, you know, they've had to spend that time with their family and they've got used to that and they don't want to sacrifice that.
Absolutely.
Or they've got used to working from home.
Yeah.
Or they've got used to doing everything virtually and don't actually want to go face to face with anyone anymore.
Absolutely. We keep hearing in all these marketing reports that have been produced en masse over the last years about how the new generation of Asian consumers is very emotionally engaged, has this very aspirational outlook, but is very, very in tune with its emotions when it makes purchasing decisions or travel decisions.
Yeah.
So, you know, this coronavirus isn't just going to have physical scars, it's going to have emotional scars about how people perceive. Are they going to be booking shorter periods? Are they going to still be booking out because of worries of cancellations, not getting their return fees?
Exactly.
We just don't know. It's a very, very uncertain look ahead. And at the moment, with it spreading to, 101 countries around the world, where are people going to travel to, even if they feel comfortable to travel again?
Yes.
Are we going to see more travel bans? Italy has been, the north of Italy is in near lockdown.
Yes.
Are we going to see borders closed?
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be a whole new frontier, I think, once this rebound does start to happen.
And I have a very good job for you, Hannah. I'm going to ask you to be doing some more cruise marketing in future.
No, thank you.
How would you want to be doing cruise marketing right now?
No, I would not. No, my heart really feels for the poor Dive and Princess marketing team at the moment. They must just be tearing their hair out, wondering what they're going to do.
Well, two cruise ships. One was in Japan. Yes. One's now off the coast of California. And for the people on board, it must be terrifying. Must absolutely be. Terrifying, because they're basically locked in their rooms the whole day.
Yeah.
It's not a holiday, it's just, it's fear of
what could
happen.
Exactly. So that brings us to the end of this week's, was it Happy Show?
No, it wasn't. I think we've depressed ourselves even more,
Yeah,
Hannah.
I think we wanted
to... We tried to be upbeat, but it didn't work.
Yeah, we tried to be hopeful. Sorry, guys.
We did promise last time, at the end of last show, that this one would be up more upbeat. And we did look. We did try to research some upbeat stories.
We asked people online who's got a happy story. No one,
No one could come back to us with anything positive.
No. So if you do have one, dear listeners...
Please tell us.
Please. We're desperate by this point. and obviously, we'd love to hear your thoughts and feedback on our 8 tourism recovery wishlist items and any other travel topics in Southeast Asia that are crossing your mind at the moment. So drop us a note on Facebook at the SEA Travel Show, Twitter at SEA Travel Show, and Instagram at SEA Travel Show.
And please do take a look at our new website, www.theseasiatravelshow. I'll say that again, www.theseasiatravelshow. Which includes all of our previous podcasts, so in case you miss any of our episodes that we've put out so far in 2020, or our 2019 Southeast Asia Travel Roundup show, which we published in December.
Yep, in December.
That's up there too.
So that's a wrap for this week's podcast. We're both off to the Malaysia Travel Fair this coming Friday, see what's going on there. And have a great week, keep healthy, and we look forward to talking Southeast Asian travel and tourism again with you soon.
Yeah, bye-bye.
See you.